Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
On behalf of the Tattered Cover Bookstore, it is my pleasure to welcome you and to thank you for your support on this rather brisk evening. I think that it's fair to say that Pam Mingle has had a life in books. First, she was a librarian, then a teacher, and now she's a writer. She debuted last year with her Colorado Book Award-winning book for young readers, Kissing Shakespeare. And tonight, we come together to celebrate the publication of her Jane Austen-inspired sequel to Pride and Prejudice, The Pursuit of Mary Bennet. We are delighted that Pam could be with us tonight, as we are delighted that you are here to help us celebrate. Would you please join me in congratulating Pam upon her publication?
Well, first I want to thank Charles and the Tattered Cover for hosting this event. It's really an honor to have a signing at the Tattered Cover. I'm thrilled. Of course, everybody's favorite bookstore, and certainly mine for I don't want to say how many years. It's embarrassing. But anyway, I'm really happy to have this event here. A few thanks to give out. First, of course, to Jim, who is my biggest supporter and cheerleader and my first reader and my person who helps me with everything and tells me when something's not right and what I need to change and how I need to fix things. And, of course, he's the chief party planner, too. So thanks, honey. I want to thank my daughter, Katie, who isn't here, so it seems kind of silly to thank her, but anyway, she had a lot of really good insights on the characters in this book, which is interesting because, as many of you know, she's gay, but she had a lot of insight on the male characters and the behavior of the male characters. So I thought that was really great that she, you know, things that I didn't think about. I also want to thank all my friends and neighbors and my fellow writers who have supported me and cheered me on through the writing of this book. I'd like to thank especially my critique groups and also the members of the Denver Boulder Jane Austen Society of North America, and I don't think any of them are here. Is anybody here from JASNA? I don't think they made it because they all live in Boulder, mostly. And I think that it's already snowing up there. So that's why they're not here. About 6 or 7 years ago, I joined JASNA. And I think it was sort of like a downtime of my writing, and I wanted to find something else to be interested in. And I thought, okay, well, I love reading, and I love reading Jane Austen, so I'm going to join this group. And at the time, I thought that I just knew so much about Jane Austen. Wow, was I wrong. I walked into that first meeting, and I was immediately intimidated because these people knew Austen chapter and verse, you know, every one of her books. They knew obscure little details about characters in Austen, you know, they could quote. They knew the letters, and I was really embarrassed at that time that I didn't tell anybody that I'd never read the letters yet, so I kept that a secret for a while. Anyway, they really inspired me and, you know, kind of cheered me on to become more of an Austen, not a scholar certainly, but more of an enthusiast than I already was. And without them, I probably wouldn't be standing here now celebrating the publication of The Pursuit of Mary Bennet. Speaking of Mary, she might seem like a strange choice as a main character in an Austen-inspired sequel. Mary doesn't have much of a presence in Pride and Prejudice. And if you're familiar with the book or you've seen any of the numerous adaptations of Pride and Prejudice on TV or in the movies, you probably know that she's not in very many scenes. So, she might have seemed like a strange choice. oftentimes when you do see Mary, she's really annoying also. She's not a very sympathetic character. But it was for some of these reasons that she stood out to someone like me who wanted to write a sequel as a person that I could work with. Because she had the most potential to transform herself and to change. And so with a little nudge from me, I think that she did that in this book. A new direction, a kind of reinvention of herself is pretty much the theme of what this book is about. Okay, we're going to do a little reading from the book, and I have some helpers. I decided that I didn't want to be up here reading all by myself. So we have Jim is the chief adapter, like you guys probably don't know, this man named Andrew Davis who adapts all the Austin novels for movies and TV. So he's my Andrew Davis, and he pretty much did this adaptation of chapter one for us to read aloud. And Jim is going to play Mr. Bennett, and Lisa Roberts from my critique group is going to be Mrs. Bennett. I'm going to be Mary, which, being the author of the book, I kind of had to be Mary, even though, of course, she's a lot younger than me. Okay. We also have Denise Vega, who's doing a little cameo for us, and you'll find out what her part is towards the end of this.
This is Mrs. Bennett. I'm Mr. Bennett. Mary.
And I am Mary. Sometimes anger is a living thing. It rose up in my chest and made me want to chew thorns. They would tear at the tender flesh on the roof of my mouth, at my cheeks and tongue. When I swallowed, the sweet, salty taste of blood would linger on my palate, along with pointy bits of thorn. I squeezed my eyes shut, contemplating the pain. Why was I loitering outside the upstairs sitting room, eavesdropping on a conversation between my parents? Especially since it aroused such ire in me. That couldn't be healthy. I leaned closer.
To see all my girls but one settled. Such joy.
Is Kitty engaged then?
She soon will be, mark my words. We will have another wedding by Michaelmas.
We had already had three weddings in the family. My two elder sisters, Jane and Elizabeth, had wed wealthy and property gentlemen 3 years ago, Mr. Bingley and Mr. Darcy. Lydia, my youngest sister, formed a rather disastrous union with one Mr. Wickham, formerly of the militia, and went off to live in Newcastle as he was currently attached to a regiment quartered there. Only Kitty and I remained at home.
Ah, you refer to Mr. Walsh, I assume. He's pleasant enough, but seems a reserved sort of fellow. Not at all the kind of... Not of all the kind I thought Kitty would have chosen. Perhaps she is too eager to wed.
I nearly choked on the irony. Kitty's foremost preoccupation was with finding a husband. And success at last. She had lately acquired a beau, a friend of Mr. Bingley, whom she met during a lengthy stay with Jane and my brother-in-law at their estate, High Tor, the very man my parents were discussing.
What do you mean? He's a handsome man and has $6,000 a year. You only met him the once, Mr. Bennett, and cannot have formed a correct impression. And anyway, who cares if he is reserved?
Kitty, perhaps? Walsh has made his intentions clear, then. Shall I expect a visit from him soon?
Not yet, but it won't be long.
What of Mary? Does she wish to wed?
Why was he inquiring about me? No one ever thought of me when marriage was discussed. I was a person of no consequence. I'd never had suitors, nor did I desire any.
Mary will make an excellent governess for Jane or Lizzie's children someday. Marriage is not for her. I cannot think of any man who would have her.
I imagined dashing into the room and pouring the contents of the teapot over her head. She was wrong in any case about one thing. Neither Jane nor Lizzie would want me as a governess for their children. They didn't think well enough of me.
Perhaps Mary should have some say in the matter.
Bah! When you are dead and Mr. Collins takes possession of our home, dear Jane or Lizzie will take us in, depend upon it, and her sisters will welcome Mary's help.
Mr. Collins was our unctuous cousin, upon whom my father's property was entailed. My mother believed his intention was to swoop down upon us grieving females to claim his inheritance before Papa was lowered into his grave.
Of course, she may be called upon soon enough to Newcastle to help Lydia and Wickham when their child is born.
And that was what infuriated me and made me wish to chew thorns, sharp, spiky thorns. It was time to make my presence known, and I knocked.
Mary, sit down and have your tea. Tell us your opinion of Kitty's lover.
He has two heads, and he's only 3 feet tall. Both countenances are fine-looking, I grant you, and Mama is correct. He does have $6,000 a year from his appearances at country fairs and exhibitions. I hardly know him, sir.
Of course you do. You've met him at High Tor, have you not?
On a few occasions, but I've never had a conversation with him. The last time I was at High Tor, Mr. Walsh, who was far too handsome and fine figure to entertain locals at a country fair, watched while I played the pianoforte, presumably listening. Perhaps he was carried away by the music. After a few moments, the rest of the party arrived, and he seated himself next to Kitty. A few furtive glances in his direction assured me of his indifference to me. Excellent, since I did not desire his attention.
But you've observed him and Kitty together. What do you think of the match?
I confess I have never noticed them speaking much to each other, aside from the usual courtesies.
Oh, what nonsense! What good is talking anyway? It only leads to quarrels and misunderstandings. I wouldn't place too much importance on it. I am certain they have a great regard for each other.
You're right, my dear. Why should any lady desire to converse with a person she may be spending the rest of her life with? And what about you, Mary?
What do you mean, sir?
A man, of course. Any prospective suitors at Pemberley or High Tor who have captured your interest?
Men don't notice Mary.
Her words burned as though she'd slapped me. I wished I were bold enough to invent a suitor, a handsome, elegantly dressed gentleman with $15,000 a year, who had declared his undying love and devotion to me, but I'd be found out soon enough. Of course not, sir. Resentment, so entrenched, rose in my chest against them both. But when I raised my eyes and peered at him over my teacup, my father's look held no hint of disdain. Since my elder sisters had married, Papa paid me more attention than he used to do. I believed he missed Lizzie's sharp wit and intelligence and hoped I might someday take her place, if not in his heart, at least intellectually. Mama, I believe I heard you mention my attending Lydia when her child is born.
You were listening at the door. Wicked girl. How many times have I admonished you not to do so? Well, yes, and so what of it?
I think it would be far better if you or Jane or Lizzie were to go. I know nothing of births and taking care of children.
Such cheek! Look at you, Mary. You have crumbs on your bosom.
I don't believe I would be very helpful in the circumstances. That was not the chief of it. The thought of passing any time with Lydia and the husband who'd been forced to marry her turned my stomach. Mama couldn't make me go.
I could not withstand the rigors of the trip. My nerves would never allow it. And your elder sisters are busy with their own families. It is your duty to go, Mary, as the only unmarried sister.
But, Mama, I'm not the only unmarried sister.
Before long, you will be.
Kitty should go. You know how close she and Lydia are.
We dare not remove Kitty from High Tor at this time. No, that wouldn't do at all. It must be you. You have nothing to do besides embroider seat cushions and trim bonnets.
Just then, our servant, Mrs. Hill, appeared in the door, announcing the arrival of my sister, Lydia. None of us made a response. We were too shocked.
Lydia, dear. But you should not be traveling so close to your confinement.
What is the reason for your visit, Lydia?
I've left Wickham. I'm moving back to Longbourn.
And that's the end.
Thank you.
the baby then. That was a shock to me. I said, no, we can't ask anybody to have a fake baby bump. And we took out that line. We took a line out of the script, which was something like, I should remember this, but it goes, Mary is astounded to see Lydia, and she says something to the effect of, my sister looked grotesquely large like a cow about to calf. But I took that out. So. Okay, so if you have a question you'd like to ask me or any about the Pursuit of Mary Bennett or writing or anything to do with this strange career that some of us pursue, I'd be happy to answer questions. Ginny.
Did writing this one just seem like a breeze? Because we went through, because it changed the chapters of this happened, and this happened, and this happened, and this would seem to come together faster.
The question was, did writing this book seem easier than writing Kissing Shakespeare? Because I seem to write it much faster. I do think it was easier. Oh, I hesitate to say that because it's not, it's never easy, but, and I'm sure that Jim would maybe not agree with that, but he listened to me whining, but it did seem to come together faster. It, of course, Kissing Shakespeare had the big research component. And this book had research also that I didn't know the Regency period, and I had to do research on that, but I knew Austen, so that really helped. There's a wonderful book by, they're annotated editions of all of Austen, I'm pretty sure. I wouldn't make that statement if any of my Austen friends were here because I could be wrong, but I really relied on a book, an annotated edition of Pride and Prejudice. And that was probably my main resource. And the people that do those annotations are just amazing, those annotated editions. So I really relied on that. But I think the hardest thing about this was worrying about, was the market saturated for Austen sequels? And did I sound at all like, you know you can't sound like Austen. I mean, that's ridiculous. But can you be true to that time period? Can you sound like, can you make your character sound like somebody who lived in the Regency? So that was probably the hardest part. Yes?
You seem to be moving up in history from Shakespeare to Austen. You can't even write a book about Molly Bloom.
Oh, I don't know about that. I think, you know, a lot of writers pick a period and they stick with it, and I think that that would have been easier. I'd write another book set in the Elizabethan period. I think that we know as writers we have to be careful what we choose to write because you have to think about whether you can sell the book. And I'd write another Regency. I have written another Regency, actually, which I haven't sent it off to my agent yet. But anyway, I think the idea is to find a period and become a real expert at it. So that would be nice to be able to do that, for sure. Jane.
Did you pick Mary immediately? Did you consider any of the other unwritten sisters?
If you read any of the Austen sequels, just common sense even would tell you that most all of them are about Elizabeth Bennet and Mr. Darcy. And usually Mr. Darcy's name is in the title. And I'm going to repeat your question because I forgot to do it with Ed's question. But the question was, did I just settle on Mary right away as my main character? I've read several of the sequels that feature Elizabeth and Mr. Darcy, and there are all kinds of them. There are all kinds of Austen sequels from the, pornographic, which is unbelievable, pornographic, erotic, you know, the zombies. There's a cat one, believe it or not. You know those cats. There are just all kinds of Austen sequels, and I've read a number of the Pride and Prejudice ones. Although when I started writing this book, I sort of quit reading those. I didn't want to be influenced. But Mary stood out to me because she's only in the book about a dozen and a half times, and that's only sometimes that's just a mention. Someone mentions Mary. She's not even in the scene. So, and she was a good character, as I mentioned in the introduction. She was a good character to try to mold and shape. She's in the middle between the two older sisters who are very close and get along great and think alike, and then the two younger ones who are sort of the opposite of the two older ones, Kitty and Lydia, who are very silly and outrageous and flirtatious. So she's kind of isolated there in the middle, and I just thought she would be a great character to work with, and I felt like I wouldn't come under too much condemnation from the Jane Austen world. Maybe. Jen, how old is Mary in the book? She is 22, roughly. she's 19 in Pride and Prejudice, and it's supposed to be 3 years later. So, yeah, she's 22. Yes, Pat.
Are you currently working on a book, on a new book?
The question is, am I currently working on a new book? Yes. Isn't that always the answer? I am. And it is set in the Regency. And that's really about all I have to say about it right now.
What's your next trip to England?
Oh, our next trip to England. Well, I don't know. We can always think of reasons to go to England, whether it's walking or doing research or... I guess it's usually for those two things, just to have fun. But yeah, we don't have one planned exactly at the moment. So, Anna Maria.
Yeah, I was wondering if you did any research in England for this book.
Did I do any research in England for this book? Well, years ago, and it was actually the very first time we went to England, and it was literally years ago. Was over 20 years ago, I think. We went, we got off the plane, got the rental car, and drove to Jane Austen's house. And we saw her little cottage that she lived in. She had a brother who was, I guess this was done fairly often during this time period and maybe other time periods in England as well, but wealthy families who didn't have heirs would sometimes adopt a child from another family, and that had happened to her brother. He had been adopted by a wealthy family. She had several brothers, but this brother's name was Edward. Edward was adopted by the Knight family, and he then inherited a big, huge estate with a very imposing home, and he provided this cottage for Jane Austen and Cassandra, her sister, and their mother to live in. And so that is open for tourists to visit, and you can walk around the village and go in the church. And now the large home, and I can't think of the name of it, the home that was Edward Austen Knight's home, is now a big research center for early women's fiction. Was actually, I think it's really interesting, was purchased by an American woman, a very wealthy American woman who I believe was Cisco Systems. She was part of that corporation, and she purchased that and has all refurbished it. And anyway, so that, I don't think I went with the idea, certainly at that time, of writing a book, an Austen sequel or anything at that time, but I think all the trips to England and visiting all the villages and just seeing what the village was like, and I had read a lot of Regency history and Regency culture before I wrote the book. So, yeah. But it wasn't like Kissing Shakespeare where I went to the site where the action took place, and yeah, that was different.
Yeah.
Okay, we need to, Jim's giving me the look, so. Looks like we need to get on with it. So again, we're going to be signing books, and please help yourself to more refreshments. And again, thank you all so much for coming out.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fote, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Stay pod-tuned in the coming weeks as we podcast Authors on Tour.